This is Habbo. We're excited about tonight's show. We really have kind of an all-star lineup set to join us this evening, starting off here shortly with iconic wide receiver Herman Moore, who will be joining us from, I assume, his business location or home out near Detroit, Michigan. He'll be followed bottom of the hour, shortly after 5:30, by former UVA offensive tackle Brad Butler, who had a stint with the Buffalo Bills in the NFL.
But 4 years with the Buffalo Bills.
In the 7 o'clock hour, we will be joined. Well, no, I'm sorry. I overlooked one. We have Dr. Bill Nort with us also in the 6 o'clock hour, I believe.
Right.
And then after the top of the hour, 7 o'clock, Dirk Kachtra, the director. What's
executive
his executive director
right.
of the Virginia Athletics Foundation will be joining us to talk about some VAF stuff, as well as the All Sports Alumni Weekend coming up in the middle of October. And then we'll have another visit in the 7 o'clock hour from Chris Horn to give us another update on both basketball and football recruiting, with news on both fronts since we last met last Wednesday. So with all that, we also welcome your calls at 345-0910. And Frank will tell you how you can follow the show.
Who's Talking is streaming live on sportsradio910.com and thesaber.com. We encourage everyone to send their questions and comments to Facebook. Just search Who's Talking and send us their comments and questions, and we try to feed them into our shows. We encourage folks also to call in. Our number here is 345-0910. That's 345-0910. Just search Who's Talking and become a fan on Facebook. We have a lot of fun.
Well, another Saturday home game in Charlottesville. As Frank said earlier, VMI, the Keydets, coming to town. A game that, in candor, Virginia should win, but would give the team an opportunity maybe to let some people play that haven't played the first 2 weeks. A home game, chance to pick up another W, and coming off the bye week, as I look at the schedule, I guess that's so much for bye weeks. They play every weekend from this point forward. So hopefully the team is rested, healthy, ready to go against the Keydets, who come in at 1-1 on the season.
Habbo, I bet you did not know this. Who are the top three teams in terms of rivalries based on games played that UVA has played throughout their 120-plus year history?
Well, since you're asking, I'm going to go with VMI as one.
Yep.
I'm going to go with North Carolina as one.
Yes. And the dreaded
Hokies? Are they
yes,
the third?
It's actually in this order: North Carolina, Virginia Tech, and VMI. And this is the first time UVA has played VMI in about, I think, 18 years or something, 18, 19 years. So this is reigniting a rivalry that for many, many years was a big deal. And I think it's great that Virginia is playing VMI. And hopefully this will be a good event on Saturday and not what I would call a steamroller-type game where the bigger, stronger team just walks over them. Although, I think that's really what's going to happen.
Although the one factor, I guess, is because Virginia's already played Richmond, the VMI game doesn't count toward the bowl eligibility. Is that right?
That is correct.
So they would need to win 7 games
to qualify,
as opposed to 6.
That is correct.
Okay. Well, I'm right about something at least.
Yeah. Well, you are right. In fact, you've got all three of the teams that played. I'm impressed.
Well, I had to have a little help with the Hokies, but I would have probably figured that out eventually. That's a rivalry that you would think would be among the top three over the years. And hopefully before long it'll be a rivalry again, because it hadn't been much of a rivalry here of late. Hokies have been pretty dominant.
I think Coach London and Coach Reed and Ron Mattis and Sean Moore and Anthony Poindexter are going to
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It's
already happening on the recruiting trail, as Chris Horn will tell us later in the show.
Well, we're hope to be joined shortly by none other than Herman Moore, a fellow that had a tremendous career at the University of Virginia, and quite possibly was the single most dangerous wide receiver in college football his last couple of years in Charlottesville. And then he went on to play for the Detroit Lions as a top draft pick. He certainly set the world on fire up there. In fact, one season he had 123 receptions in one season, which at that time was an NFL record. Let's see, Jesse, have we got Herman on? Herman, are you there?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're great. This is Frank. We've also got Jim on the other side.
Herman, I'm glad you're able to join us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Herman, we thought we'd start off right off the bat. Talk about your recruiting process and who the football player was that hosted you when you first stepped on the grounds at UVA.
Well, it's interesting because I probably made a lot of people in Blacksburg, Virginia, mad because I had originally was going to attend Virginia Tech until I met a gentleman named Sean Moore, who I didn't know later would turn out to be one heck of a quarterback. He was actually the person that, in my recruiting visit to Virginia, was my host. And needless to say, he made quite an impression on me as a person. But the university itself was just outstanding.
Now, has Sean convinced you to come back to Virginia as a wide receivers coach yet?
No, he has not. But I told him that, you know, he and Coach London, if they're ever looking for some assistance with the receivers, I'd be more than happy to come out and lend what I hope is expertise to that field, because it's something I'm very passionate about.
Well, I think we'd allow him to qualify as an expert when it comes to wide receivers, certainly based on the record.
You know, Herman, I was joking earlier with some friends on the phone that back in the day, I seem to remember just a couple of plays that just stood out so many times. And then we got into arguing which play was the greatest. And so right off the bat, is there a particular moment or a particular play when you played at UVA that sticks out as your favorite moment as a Cavalier?
Absolutely. My favorite moment, and for those who are diehard Cavalier fans, they'll remember I don't remember how many consecutive losses to Clemson. And they were in Charlottesville, and I ended up catching, coincidentally, my very first touchdown pass for UVA in the corner of the end zone, and that's my most memorable moment in terms of just kind of how it all just took off from there.
That would have been the 88 season. Was that your first season when you were playing?
It was my second season. I was redshirted my first season, but my second year in 88 was that year, and it was a fantastic year.
Yeah, that Clemson losing streak was a source of irritation for a long time for Virginia, I'm sure, players as well as fans. Although it was finally nice to get that first W.
You know, quite something that was held over our heads for quite some time. And you know, it was an electrifying crowd that day. I remember it was very sunny. And just to be in that atmosphere, because being a young player, you go from high school, and even though I didn't play my first year, it was technically still brand new to me, and to be out there in front of all the people in Scott Stadium and have the crowd cheering, it was pretty special.
How was Coach Welch to play for?
You know, Coach and I, we got off to a little bit of a shaky start. My coach at the time was Tom Sherman, who really honed in my skills and made me really, I give him a lot of credit for being such a teacher that helped me with my receiving skills. But Coach Welch and I, at first, didn't see eye to eye, and I got an interesting story about Coach. And I'm sure all the players that come through UVA will have different tales of Coach Welch. But for me, it was one day we were on the field, and Sean Moore had thrown me a couple small five-yard passes. And to me, I thought it was more of a walk-through drill. So one of the balls landed on the ground, and I kind of left it there. And Coach Welch comes running over, and he's screaming, you know, Christ, Herman, pick up the ball. Pick the ball up and run it back to the huddle. And I just kind of looked at it. I didn't know he was yelling at me. And I kind of left it there. And he told Coach Herman, no, get him off the field. I don't want him on the field. And all of a sudden, I start walking off. And at the time, you know, being young and you're not thinking, I started just removing elements of clothes. I was walking off. And Coach Ruff was, you know, he just got really irritated by that. But Coach and I became really, really close through my years at UVA, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for the man.
Herman, when was the last time that you remember talking to Coach Welch?
I want to say maybe less than a year ago.
And I saw him in the president's box at the first game, the U of R game, and I caught him smiling a few times watching Virginia run the power sweep with Keith Payne down by the goal line. I'm sure that would have brought back some memories there.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Herman, I always have to preface these things as a basketball guy. You got to understand my lack of football knowledge. But when you were in college, did you wear gloves as a receiver?
I did. When I was in there, not many players. It was in the age when guys didn't really wear gloves. But for me, I kept getting these calluses on my fingers. So they had gloves out at the time. They were those white gloves. And people used to call them usher gloves. Mm-hmm. You know, like you see guys that wear in church because when you run on the field, it made your hands look huge. And I wore gloves the first few years, and then I tried it a few times without it, but it turned out that was definitely the right path.
So it was really, really more to protect your hands from injury as opposed to assisting you in catching the ball.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you build strong fingers as wide receivers, and I think when you're out playing, that's really what you pay a lot of attention to, focusing on the football and honing in on your skills. But the gloves were good at the time for when you had some rainy games, and it was after the era where guys used to spray all that stickum on their hands, and they'd get up off of grass fields and they'd have it all stuck to their clothes and their hands. So with the gloves, I think it revolutionized the way players played, because your fingers didn't get torn up as much.
You know, Herman, I was looking at your professional statistics, and quite impressive. There was, I believe, a stretch of about 6 or 7 years where you just put up some ridiculous numbers. I was very intrigued. In your first year or two, were there some injuries you were dealing with? And then all of a sudden, it seemed like in years 3, 4, and 5, you just exploded. And was it the change in quarterbacks? Was it the change in the system? Was it changes in coaches? Or did you just start all of a sudden figure out how to dissect the defense and get open downfield?
You know, that's a good question, because it was a combination of, one, I came to Detroit at 20 years old, being a first-round pick, and pretty scared and nervous. And anyone who says that they're not, when you go to the NFL level, they're not telling the truth. But I had some issues because I wore contact lenses out of college. And when I came to Detroit, I didn't. I had some real struggles in catching the football, which most people wouldn't believe that, considering the career I had at Virginia. But I struggled really in the first preseason game, and then also in the first couple games of the season, to where I think the coaches lost a little confidence, and there was a little skepticism as whether or not the right pick was made with that first pick. And then eventually I got my contact lenses changed. But I credit it really to 6'6", 320-pound lineman, who threatened me if I dropped any more passes, it would be my last one. So they really were the ones who helped me, because the big fellas down in the trenches, when opportunities for big plays to be made aren't made, they get a little irritated, because they don't want to be on the field any longer than they want to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they helped me along the way.
I gotta say, though, it's hard to catch it if you can't see it. So the contact. From the standpoint of a wide receiver, what would you say is the biggest difference between college and professional football?
Really is just the speed of the game, and the fact that, you know, you start to really weed out, each week you hear some guys go, oh, well, this NFL team, they don't have the talent, or they don't have the players. But these are the best players. So the talent gap closes to where everyone's pretty consistent. And the gap in terms of having a good player go against a bad player from one week to another just doesn't take place. So that's one of the biggest thing. And then, again, like I said, the speed and just the size and sheer athleticism on a consistent basis is what you're dealing with. It's no longer just running and being wide open unless there was a busted play. So you have to make plays, and you have to create opportunities, because you're just not going to have a lot of space between you and the defender, whether you're a wide receiver or a cornerback covering a wide receiver, or a defensive lineman, an offensive lineman. I mean, the talent really gets pretty close.
Herman, I noticed it looks like you played a receiver for Eric Kramer, Rodney Peete, Dave Craig, Scott Mitchell, Charlie Batch, and maybe even Gus Frerotte at one point. Of those quarterbacks, who did you have maybe the best relationship with, or did you have a better connection with in terms of reading what they were reading in terms of when you guys came up to the line of scrimmage?
Well, it was a combination. During the time when I first came, we had what we used to call the three-headed dragon, which was Eric Kramer, Andre Ware, Rodney Peete.
Right.
And then we also had Chuck Long. And these are all, you know, Heisman guys. that were quarterbacks. And then one guy that was probably not in that list was Don Majkowski. I actually played with him when he came over from Green Bay. But Scott Mitchell was probably the quarterback I had the most success when you look at from a statistical standpoint.
Right.
Some of the tremendous years. He was the guy that we had picked up from Miami, I think, in 1994. And he took us to a couple of playoffs, two or three playoffs, and really, you know, 4,000 or 5,000-yard seasons. And the rapport that I developed with him was just through just a lot of training and a lot of just spending time in the off season, which a lot of players at the time were doing. And you were really committed to, and you just get on the same page, similar to what I had with Sean Moore at UVA,
right.
In that it's this unspoken, you know, nonverbal communication that takes place between receiver and quarterback. And
Herman, for a minute. This is Jeff. We got to go to break for a couple minutes. Could you hang with us through the break? I think we may even have a caller that has a question for us. Can you hang for a couple of minutes, and we'll come right back to you?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, we'll be back with Herman Moore following these messages.